Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We got kind of a special edition today, so I'm going to throw immediately to my compatriot co-host, Jason Kirk. Jason, what are we doing today?
Well, we seeing as college football is super fucking nigh, as in we are in the month of August, as in college football starts in August, this is sort of the time of year when you review what you've done, accomplished, consumed during the time without football. You know, those of us who work in college football, this is sort of when we say goodbye to, like, you know, culture, you know, keeping up on things going on in the world. And you know, those of you, if you're a diehard fan, you're very much, you know, in a similar position. So we wanted to sort of review the cultural items that we have interacted with, you know, since the last football season ended, and just some run through some stuff we liked. That's a pretty simple way to put it, right? Just, you know, some stuff happened and it was pretty good. And we're not talking about news, you know, that's the real world too, but it's recommended to consume as little of that as possible.
What would be the news that we liked? What would that even be?
You know what?
We seem to enjoy a large part of the Papa John story, not the racism, but, you know, just the fact that it involved Papa John.
Yeah. I have a couple of pieces of news that I enjoyed. For instance, there was a bison who was taunted by a tourist in Yellowstone, and the bison tried to show him what's up. Dude was like, "What's good?" The bison was like, "Oh, I'll show you. Come here."
And the wasn't there like a Waffle House hero or something like that? Didn't that happen at some point?
That was a thing. A shark got kidnapped from an aquarium, I think in San Antonio.
Yes, but
definitely in Texas, and
it was
taken,
organized theft.
Yeah, it was right? taken out. It was taken out in like a baby carriage, and nobody noticed.
A shark heist? There was a shark heist?
Oh, yeah, there's a shark heist.
Was the shark okay?
I mean, I think so. I don't know that they've recovered the shark at this point.
In true
modern media fashion, I did not follow up.
Right, right. You have nothing to actually go on.
Nope.
Just anonymous sources.
Just
memes. One other exciting piece of news, if you're listening to this, dear listener, which in fact you are, if you're a listener, think about it. Shutdown Fullcast Live tickets are on sale as of this moment. We're playing the Rich Theater in Atlanta because we're rich. We're not rich. On August 31st, the Friday night of opening weekend. It's not actually the opening weekend. Follow through. We'll be giving away stuff. We'll have stuff you can give us stuff for.
There we go.
We'll have air horns, man. We'll have air horns. We will have some fun guests doing silly stuff. We'll do interactive bullshit with you like you'd expect.
The best part, we're going to do if you're not familiar with how this works, and you listen to podcasts, so you probably are, you do the live show, you record it, and then you release it as an episode. And fortunately, I think everybody understands that live shows are pretty average audio quality wise. So ours is probably just going to sound like.
No, I think people would be like, no, this sounds normal.
Yeah.
But the audio version of this that we release is not going to have one thing, a Q&A that we are doing just for people who show up, because we want to pull on that part. We want you to know that there is a part of this podcast that you will not be able to listen to unless you go to the show.
Can I get air horn one more time?
There we go.
What Ryan is saying is that this podcast live show will have an exclusive
movie. That's right.
Yeah. It's tickets are $25. You get a koozie that has me as the bloomin' onion on it. You so get it.
That's right.
Are we going to do this the whole episode? I just want to know.
No, we're not doing this the whole episode.
So when Spencer says that, I picture him trying to confiscate something from Holly and just giving it.
Yeah, just mic on mute, frantic arms flailing.
Spencer is surprisingly fast for such a big galoot, but I have elusiveness.
You get a beverage, you get a raffle ticket for a Shutdown Fullcast prize pack. Can we talk about the most exciting part of the prize pack? Do we feel comfortable talking about the special item that's going to be in there?
I really think we should.
Yeah.
It's an air horn.
Spencer, do you want to tell them what it is?
I don't know what you're talking about.
God damn it, I knew it! I knew if I gave you a chance, you'd fuck it up.
How about this? Ryan, you set it up to the word.
Okay.
And then Spencer, once Ryan pauses, you say the first word you say on this podcast each time we record, okay?
Okay. Listeners, if you come to the show, you will be entered into a raffle in which you can win a prize pack that includes a...
Welcome!
Matt, a Shutdown Fullcast welcome mat that will say welcome in the way you think it says welcome. It's also made out of Spencer's beard hair, so that's fun.
It's 100% authentic Spencer beard hair.
We're assuming all y'all live in houses clean with no doors because you're incredibly wealthy.
Why does this welcome mat smell like patchouli?
Oh, how dare you,
sir? Sir, like it is not scented. With the finest lush bath products.
And Dorito dust.
You've been on that like Trader Joe's like gochujang almond thing. But yeah, sure, Dorito dust. So much money. That's right. Rich folks only in my mansions.
Let's just do the show, please, now. Oh, sure. Also, if you want tickets, go to preownedairboats.com. That's
preownedairboats.com. Not joking. That's our official website.
That's how you can get to the ticket link.
It does redirect.
For actual preowned airboats, go to preownedairboats.biz.
Yeah.
That is owned by Holly Anderson.
Holly
comes on to plug the family business every now and then.
I do have a couple of stories that, by the way, before we turn the page on that, a couple of off-season news stories that I really enjoyed a lot. I enjoyed the story, if you did not see it, of the Florida man who carried an alligator into a convenience store and then went interviewed on TV about it. It was a video that went around the internet of him toting the alligator, who honestly kind of looked like a sort of lethargic toddler, just chilling. Not even snapping at things randomly, just crooked up in his arm, looking around like, hey, bro, you getting some Bush Light? Good. Good. That's some good shit. Yeah, he just was toting it around, and when interviewed on TV, said, and I quote, man, I don't even remember that. They got some good-ass liquor in that store. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the story of the fireworks-based gender reveal, which... if you watch the video, went tragically wrong.
Did it?
Not tragically. It did terrify everyone in attendance. Let's see what the baby is. Oh, the baby's a hell monster.
A non-binary hell monster.
Yeah. It was the Caucasian suburban version of damn these bootleg fireworks. It was really, really impressive. And I also enjoyed, you know, while I'm wrapping up the... Stories I frantically sent to everyone I know. It's not from this year. I did enjoy learning that in 1997, a poacher shot and wounded a tiger in Russia. That's from an NPR article. The tiger waited like a day for him at his cabin, broke into the cabin, destroyed everything he had, and then waited for him to come home and killed him.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's Liam Neeson's tiger. I think the theme here is we like it when people engage with dangerous animals and then find out exactly how much karma they've laid up.
Fireworks are
also
fireworks
Liam
is an animal.
In
that's
the gray.
True.
This cat actually followed through.
That's right.
Oh, come on. He tried hard.
Oh, yeah. That's all he did.
Yeah, you know what the tiger did? The tiger finished the drill.
Finished
that's
the
what
damn
the tiger
drill.
Did.
Holly, in the alternate universe, just like this one, where the gray is the movie you wanted it to be, how much better is your life?
A good 40%. And I also have recouped a ton of lost work productivity time that I'm currently spending yelling, we were on a break, Liam, every time I see him on TV.
Oh, one more, and not to get too terribly topical with things. I can listen to anyone talk about somebody buying bad $15,000 ostrich leather jackets all day. Like, that's it. That's all I want. Like, if somebody's rich, I want you to tell me exactly what an idiot. They're like, the rich spend their money wisely. Investments always pay for themselves. Court documents suggest this man paid for a $15,000 ostrich leather jacket that looked like some bootleg trash they bought off a corpse at a 1985 F1 race.
But you know what?
In, like, country-ass France.
Spencer's talking about the new Manny Fresh. Paul
Manny Fresh.
Paul Manafizzle.
Paul Manny Fort.
Paul Manafizzle product shizzle.
Every sentence ends exactly the way I wanted it to, plus some. Like, if it starts, it's like, Paul Manafort spent $2 million on landscaping. I'm like, yes, yes, keep going. And I was like, including a, oh, yes, keep going, a $15,000 arrangement of red tulips. Oh, no, no, keep going. In the shape of, please be an M. Please be an M. An M! Like, it's always what I want it to be.
A misspelled M.
These are the people who read The Great Gatsby and got a very different message from it, from everybody else.
This guy's fucking awesome.
Fuck! All those colored shirts! I don't have that many!
What's the message? Always make people make appointments. Otherwise, they can't just roll up and shoot you. Otherwise, not a single lesson in this whole thing.
I think the message is ball as hard as you can, because it's all going to come to an end anyway.
No one ever admit hitting anyone with your car.
Oh, not a problem.
That's the message of The Great Gatsby.
Don't trust optometrists.
Don't snitch. Don't trust optometrists. Always have someone make an appointment, and if someone hits someone with a car, no one say shit.
God, Jay Gatsby, probably a booster for the University of Miami in retrospect.
Oh, 100%.
Why do you think the light across the pond was green?
Yeah, I was going to say, Miami doesn't believe in red lights either.
that and only a Miami grad would read about somebody dying wealthy and face down in a pool and go, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I think the only word they hear is pool. It's a bomb ass pool.
Did you say pool and mansion? Yes, I said dead in a pool, face down.
So they think Great Gatsby is just like a Scarface prequel or something.
It kind of is. It's the basic bitch Scarface, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
It's the
Vineyard Vines Scarface.
it is. It's like, well, and then I became wealthy and I was moderately decadent about it.
Mm-hmm. Wonder if they're adopting our blow strategy. Spencer and I have this running gag where if you stop watching every cocaine movie 45 minutes in, it's an incredibly rewarding career that hurts no one.
Right.
Yeah,
you got out at the right time.
And it feels like the perfect attention span for your average Miami enthusiast.
Like, if you tell them about Paul Manafort, they're like, oh, so this guy's awesome.
Oh, Paulie.
Yeah, he escaped. Let's see, he didn't pay taxes. He made a lot of money. And you're trying to tell me right now he's got a one-bedroom apartment, everyone pays for everything? Yeah, it's called prison. No. Revisit this.
Listen, bro, all I know is his hair is always on point.
Yeah. Dude's handsome. I'm not saying he did anything. I mean, what? Catch him. What, is ballin' a crime? I'm sorry,
it is? You're telling me in some circumstances ballin' is a crime?
He's being held in solitary confinement. I hear one-bedroom apartment. I hear no roommates.
That's a luxury box. That's the prison luxury box is what that is.
Yeah.
Can I throw in one late breaking my favorite off-season thing? Because it happened today.
Oh, God.
No, this is the only good thing that's happened this week on this hell internet. Which is I'm in Arkansas on a reporting trip, which was my first mistake. And close to the Texas border, looking for someplace to have breakfast. Scrolling Yelp reviews on my phone. And I discovered Yelp user Robert G. He has 247 Yelp reviews in this town of 37,000 people that I'm staying in. And his review for this diner that I was looking at reads as follows. Robert G., 1 year ago. Men wearing baseball and cowboy hats with Leatherman and other tools on their belts. Jeans. Women shaped like plump cubes with square butts and large breasts blessed on them by menopause. well-behaved children, Coca-Cola memorabilia on the walls, laughter and Texas twang floating above the clash of dishware, people moving about, shaking hands, and hugging old friends. Got the picture? It's America. Simple and good. Unpretentious. So is the food. Useful zero, funny zero, cool one.
Man, Garrison Keillor has really spiraled downwards.
Robert would never did
come to this restaurant. It's got square butts.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions about what Robert G thinks menopause is.
Has he tried to fuck a Lego? Has he tried to fuck a Lego minifig? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know. I also got to tell you, he's got 247 reviews and 3 photos in his profile. One is a selfie, and 2 are of the same bowl of Cheerios with blueberries on it.
Is the selfie of his square butt?
Ooh, no. No, it's a facey.
Like if you're putting on Minecraft, Robert's like, hey. What's that?
All right, I gotta do one more Robert G review. Calling Shorty's Donut Shop and Diner the worst breakfast I have had since I was a Cub Scout. My next stop was for chewing gum.
Damn.
Bobby G.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read any further because I know that the next thing I click will have a big milkshake duck reveal behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to keep Robert the way he is with his weirdly Picasso-shaped view of women. He's beautiful. And I'm going to keep him in amber in my heart.
I love your right angles.
My square Gymboree furniture heart.
Mm. Oh, wait. I did forget one. One more and then I'm done. Which was, and I bookmarked it. That's how that's how much this story meant to me.
Wow. Spencer, how many bookmarks do you have? It's either like 2 or like thousands.
Thousands.
Okay.
Thousands. How many of the other ones are the Sendido song?
2 of them. I actually have that one bookmarked twice. Different versions. Same one. I'm just going to read the headline. I'll be done. Florida man with no arms accused of stabbing tourist. There. Go Gators.
We'll give one of these the off-season Heisman. Yeah. Probably the one about Florida not being able to pass.
Probably that. But yeah, give that man no arms. I give him. He's 3. I'm giving 3 points to Florida in that game.
Yeah, punt. So we had a few pop culture categories we wanted to run through: movies, TV, music, video games, of course, because we're all tall toddlers except for Holly and books, whatever those are. I guess we can start with movies.
I have a fresh one.
Spencer has one resting on his
heart. I'm ready to go.
Hold on. We also have to explain that we are doing these on our on a specific curve. So if you're expecting this to be like the best movies of summer 20, nope, it's probably not going to be that.
No. I'm talking about the movie which was the most awesome. Okay.
And to be clear, these are things that are new to us. Mm-hmm. So if, mm-hmm. you know, what Ryan's getting at, if you weren't able to see it last year, the year before that, because you have a child, then it's new to you.
Yeah, dad curve could be like a lot. Could be like 4 or 5 years, realistically. Because before last week, this was Thor Ragnarok being the best thing that I'd seen, which I'm definitely late to on the curve, right? As if a movie could not be more designed to blow personal smoke up my ass, right? My very own ass, it would be this movie, because if I wasn't convinced before all that, if I wasn't convinced before half the movie is basically dry, absurdist, like Kiwi humor, before all of that, there is the scene where Thor descends from the heavens without his hammer yet in full control of his powers to the tune of the Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin, at which point I stood up for no reason in my own living room watching it as though summoned. That was number one before it was displaced by the best thing I saw this offseason, which was Mission Impossible Fallout. Has anyone seen, I know Holly has seen it. Have either of you seen it?
No, Movie Pass can't afford it. Therefore, I can't either.
I intend to see it, but I have not yet.
Okay. I will try to do my best without giving spoilers. Although
if you do, yeah, nobody goes to this and be like, ooh, where will the plot twist? Like,
no, this means that you can go into it with our imaginary premise that we came up with for this movie.
I have seen every Mission Impossible movie multiple times. It's a series that I love. I can tell you what happens in the first movie. I can tell you a little bit of what happens in the third movie. The rest of them, I could not tell you the plot. I couldn't even, like, make a good guess at it.
Tom Cruise nearly dies in real life.
Tom Cruise jumps off thing you're not supposed to jump off
that's
of.
That's the reason a lot of us are there at this point, right?
I swear half the trailers for this movie were just like, hey, look at this shit Tom Cruise is doing. You want to see if he lands?
Yeah, no, that's half the movie. That's not half the trailer. That's half the movie.
You ever seen your uncle break his femur?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have only seen two Mission Impossible movies, and I'm real curious to learn after seeing this most recent one. At what point in the series did it become a musical without songs? Because there was a pack of dandies in this one.
Yeah, this is everything you need to know about the world is explained in Mission Impossible movies. One, all Europeans are evil. But the high grade, the like Johnny Walker Blue level of evil, is Eastern Europe, right?
Oh, sure.
Like, there's this entire great school of movies dating back to the 90s that's basically like Budapest, 1992. You're like, ooh, this is going to involve some cell phones and SIM cards, isn't it?
It's good. Croatia.
Now, you are leaving one thing out. The Mission Impossible movies also posit that there's only one group more evil than Eastern Europeans, and that is evil Americans. We're the best at it. We are the best at evil.
We are so the best at evil.
It's the most evil is like the government entity you work for once you go rogue, like you're Jack Bauer or Captain America or so on and so on.
We can't, by the way, we can't even, like, that's how absolutely childish and selfish we are as a nation. We can't even give anyone the evil crown, right? Who's the best? We are. Who's the worst? We are also the worst.
We're the best at worst.
We're the best at containing multitudes.
Yes.
But seriously, there's several points in this movie in which I'm convinced either a dream ballet or a Harry's Razors ad read is about to break out, and I would have been satisfied with either one.
You know that John Woo directed a Mission Impossible, right?
That's why I stopped watching him after the first one.
It's the one with Tom Cruise has long hair.
So that's if you're asking where did the like manic dream ballet with guns start? Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say it was Mission Impossible 2.
Excellent point. You could overlay this movie with Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and it syncs up like Dark Side of the Moon and Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I think we should definitely do that next off season. Not only are Europeans evil, but Americans are more evil. I'll add that corollary. Anything can be driven if you just have a positive attitude. Anything. You just need a positive attitude and you can drive, fly, or otherwise conduct any form of transportation safely, sometimes at high speed and under great duress. It doesn't matter. There is an entire the entire finishing sequence involves Tom Cruise learning to fly a helicopter simply by having a really good attitude.
Y'all know the boop meme? It's just Tom Cruise in a helicopter booping another helicopter.
Boop.
Boop, helicopter boop.
Yeah, and he's just saying the whole time, I can do this! And honestly, you're so gassed up because you've watched the plot of the entire movie is basically to see if your cardiologist was a madman and he wanted you to do a stress test as a 55-year-old man by running through a side scroller that was 2 hours long.
56.
Yeah, 56 at time of release, right? Seeing if he could do a stress test at high speed while also doing parkour and learning to fly a helicopter and punching a dude on the side of a cliff. And by the time you get to him flying a helicopter, you're like, yeah, man, you could do this. It's just, it's Stockholm syndrome, but with optimism.
The other common thread in these movies is everything can be rodeo. Every Mission Impossible has a scene where Tom Cruise's character rodeos something that is not a bull.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just like, hey, I don't know, what if he just held onto the space shuttle super hard? Yeah, it's lifting off into orbit. Yeah, it's got the force to escape Earth's gravitational pull, but he's got grip strength.
What if he's holding onto Ving Rhames flying into the atmosphere?
Three, Ving Rhames will do your emotional labor for you.
Yes.
He's the emotional center of all of these movies. He bears a really unfair burden in terms of feelings. He basically, every time that the script needs, like, how does this absolute insane idiot jumping across rooftops, being chased by 20 dandified people who all look like, we couldn't get Tom Hardy for this role, so we got this guy. Right? Just 20 of those guys. They're like, Tom Hardy was a little too pricey.
So it's like Tom Cruise is Ving Rhames' like stunt Avatar or something like that.
Ving Rhames performs all the emotional stunts in this movie.
Yeah, the two of them together just split up an acting role.
Yeah.
One of the real weird parts of this movie is that Tom Cruise is not, of course, aging. He does not age. Everyone else in the movie who's been in it over and over again is aging naturally. And so it's like Tom Cruise has become their smaller yapping pet that they all good-naturedly drag around.
Yeah.
And pull out of French rivers and shit.
It's like, yeah, it's actually very similar to the Beethoven movies, except Beethoven is Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's just a small, needy dog.
Yeah. He's a small, needy dog that there's a couple of inversions, obviously. Instead of just, I don't know, messing up a kitchen, he does things like, I don't know, foiling a hostage crisis.
Yeah. Charles Grodin is the evil European. Or is Charles Grodin Alec Baldwin's character?
Also, Alec Baldwin is good in this.
Dude, we didn't even mention Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin's in this and he's actually nails, man. Like, we're so used to seeing him as like in 30 Rock, and he kind of actually is like
being a horrible person in real life.
Yes. Sort of like semi edgy Hunt for Red October Alec Baldwin for a second.
That's a real
He's got jokes. It's good.
Yeah. It's the best thing I've seen, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Jason, also, what's your movie? No. You can't keep talking about Mission Impossible the whole time.
I could do it for an hour, so I'm going
to
stop.
I know.
Well, he could. So, thanks to MoviePass, and this is not an ad read, I'm way more caught up on pop culture than I usually am.
MoviePass can't pay you for an ad read.
I mean, they could pay us. They can afford us, let's be honest here.
I saw, by the way,
we got $7 left.
This morning at one point, like, MoviePass's technical value was $285,000.
Yeah, I tried to go to a movie this week while in Arkansas, where Prime tickets cost $7.57, and MoviePass had them all grayed out.
Yeah, they're like, you can pay us a dollar for this. Can we hold $7.50? We'll buy your ticket.
No take backs.
So like, I was looking, and like, I've seen just about everything I'd want to see. There's still a few left over. Infinity War was awesome. Black Panther was awesome. A Quiet Place was great, far better than Hereditary, which sucked. I like the very divisive Annihilation. It's super fucked up, so go see that. But I got to put on here for Hurricane Heist. did anybody see Hurricane Heist?
I did not.
Wait, is that Geostorm or is that a different movie?
Oh, it's Geostorm, but dumber.
It's Cage.
It's like Geostorm, but you're in the storm.
Tell me more.
It is the stupidest fucking movie I've ever seen. Let me put it this way. The only other person I know who likes it is Robbie Calland. And if you know his taste in movies, if you follow him on Twitter and see him getting way too excited about Fast and Furious or whatever, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of the worst acting I've ever seen. Quite possibly, there's like this hot lady hacker, which, like, you know, okay, now we're getting really Hollywood here. It's like, you know, sure, a woman can handle computers, but is she going to do it in like a dress, you know? Possibly the worst actor I've ever seen. The special effects and all that, it's perfectly competent. You feel like you are in a heist during a hurricane. That's the plot. It's in the movie. It's one of those movies where you look at the title and you get it. It's awful, and I can't wait to see it again.
They're not hiding the ball.
Right. It's not one of these movies where, like, there's like some like John Travolta movie where it's called like you know, it's just like two words, and there's no clue what it's about. It's the one I always think of as the example. It's, you know, like
Swordfish. Collateral. Are you talking about Swordfish?
Well, that would be one, but it's one where it's like a vague word. You know, like decisions. You know, like that's the name of the movie. It's like, what the fuck is it about?
Right.
Decisions.
You know, this is more the Snakes on a Plane school of headlining.
Hotel for Dogs.
My pick is a movie from 2015. And it is the movie, a Melissa McCarthy movie, kind of in the vein of what Spencer's going for, called Spy. Have either of
you
seen
it? Yes! Yes! It's so good!
Spy is a really fucking good movie. It does what it's a good comedy, but what I was really impressed by and did not expect is that it is also, like, it tells a good spy story. It's a good spy movie. It does, like, action well. It has, like, a plot with the twist that it's supposed to have. Jason Statham is just this irrepressible asshole throughout most of it,
Jason
which is
Statham
fun.
Is funny in it.
Yes, he is funny in
Weird.
It. It's, like, Spy is better than it has reason to be, or at least than I expected it to be. It did all the things it was supposed to do in terms of this will be a funny movie. with well-written jokes and sight gags and shit like that. But it also was just like, no, this was like better written than a lot of movies that are just trying to be spy movies.
Oh, yeah. And I will watch the entire thing because Jude Law also plays an absolute asshole. Like,
he plays Ryan Lochte.
Yeah. He plays Ryan Lochte, comma, spy in it. And Jason Statham plays Jason Statham, but with like on some sort of drugs that are counterindicated.
Right. Like, right.
Just not quite smart or there, but not really aware that he's not smarter. That he's brilliant. He's really like Jason Statham is really, really great in it. Which, by the way, like Jason Statham, there is a movie where he plays, God, I can't remember, a guy who's lost his memory. It's like Jason Statham actually made a serious movie. And honestly, I started watching it and I was like, oh no, this is not good. And reader, listener, it did not turn out to be good. However, it turned out to be better than I thought. So I was like,
okay,
man's got range.
Yeah. He's an incredible actor.
All right. What's next?
Holly, is yours also Mission Impossible?
I don't know what my favorite movie is this year. I moved, or this off season, like I moved in March and I haven't really seen any movies until MoviePass really started hemorrhaging money. So I just kind of started to, I've seen like three movies this week because I'm trying to. So
you saw them falling down and you're like, let me pile on.
Yeah. I was like, I've been propping the rest of you geniuses up all along because I've had MoviePass for like 3 months and I hadn't seen any movies on it till this week. So I've decided, like, once I triple my initial investment of, like, $19 or whatever, I'm getting out. So I saw Skyscraper last night.
And hell yeah.
I just want to point out one thing. It is, Jason, is like you said, it's everything I thought that this movie was going to be, which is really saying something. I want to point out something that gets so glossed over in the movie in the name of everything else that happens, but I think it's weirdly more impressive than almost anything that Dwayne The Rock Johnson does in the movie, which is when he's getting, the skyscraper's in there, it's very tall, his family's in it, it's on fire and shit, he's on the other side of Hong Kong, he steals a police motorcycle. The first thing he does after eluding the cops and getting back to the giant tower with his family trapped on the burning 98th floor is commandeer a gigantic construction crane, the elevator in which is locked. And he just climbs up the outside it and they go away to like one short cutaway scene in a police trailer and they cut back and he's up on the level where his family is. He climbed like 103 stories on the outside of a crane and no attention is paid to this in the movie itself. And it's never referred to again. Like, oh, if he had run up like 103 flights of stairs, I feel like that would have been visually something that they could have like cut back and forth to with, you know, him huffing and puffing past the like 55th floor sign. But he just kind of apparates. And I kind of feel like that's the most impressive thing he does. And it doesn't appear on screen.
Yeah. Whenever you're not looking at him, he goes so much faster. And like the amazing thing about that is it's not just him climbing. It's him and like the entire city of Hong Kong watching him climb.
I also very much enjoyed the part at the beginning where he has to fight with his skinny friend from the army who's turned on him, because you can tell he's having to work really hard to pretend that this skinny dude can overpower him. And that's, I wrestling. Think that's kind of gracious of The Rock.
Yeah, that's his wrestling background. He's putting that dude over.
But it has like an air of gentility about it. Like, oh, come on, buddy.
I think the other thing in the movie is that they actually turned the first time The Rock is actually poorly suited to a job, right? Like, because he's so big and heavy and has to hang off things. You're like,
oh yeah.
You're like, his obstacle is his ass. he has to overcome his own ass.
Yeah, not the best movie I've seen this year, but definitely the most recent. I also saw two movies in 24 hours in which a hacker character says, "I'm in," out loud, referring to a computer system. So I appreciate that. Shout out to Skyscraper and whatever the new Jurassic Park movie is.
Oh, Jesus.
Let's see here. Next up, how about TV shows? I'm trying to catch up on Game of Thrones. It's taking forever. I don't think anyone else here watches it, right?
No, I do.
I gave up on it. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I bailed.
Yeah. It's Lord of the Rings with square butts everywhere that don't have pants on them.
R.I.P. Like, yeah, Oberyn. We get it.
But Last Chance U was more interesting. Is anyone up on that at all?
Nope.
No.
I have never watched an episode of Last Chance U from any season.
The first two seasons are awesome. Just really any football fan would like them, especially any college football fan. Well, like and or feel bad about college football, which is usually the same thing. But this one, they go to a new school where the coach is, for the first half of the season, like, you hate him. And not just like, oh, coach is hard, coach is a tough guy. He's like, before the first game, he's in a hot tub smoking a cigar talking about he's a gameplay savant. He doesn't need to plan. All he needs to do is get his players to try and win one for him. And they'll just dominate this team. They lose 70-21. From there,
awesome.
He ratchets that motivation style up. He keeps emphasizing coaching doesn't matter. All they have to do is care a lot. They just have to want to win one for me, no matter how much they hate me. Game four, they're in a losing streak. He tries to fight his quarterback, former FSU quarterback Malik Henry. Third straight year, a former FSU QB has been on the show. Go Noles. Jimbo gets him paid. He literally tries to fight him and tries to fight his assistant wide receivers coach. He's bigger than both of them combined. But after that, he kind of becomes just a normal football coach. He chills out. He stops screaming. He stops motherfucking, you know, in every sentence. Still a lot of them, which is good. But, you know, just try and make it through, like, you know, a meeting with, like, a player's mom without cussing. You know, he doesn't do that. And, like, by the end, you're kind of like, okay, I think I'll just watch this dude grow up. And by the end, it ends up being a really compelling season of TV, and that's really all the TV I watched. It was okay. About college football.
I caught up on The Crown, which I thought was very enjoyable. I have one chief complaint about The Crown, and it's from a production angle. So there are lots of scenes in the show that take place in Buckingham Palace, and whatever they've done to recreate it is very impressive. It's staged well. You know, they've taken the time, and I know they've spent the money on this show to sort of make it look authentic and lived in, all the things you want your set to be. But there are multiple scenes in this fucking thing where somebody will call out the time of day. They'll say, like, oh, it's 8 o'clock and it's time to watch blah, blah, blah. And then they will be sitting in a room with windows and it's full on fucking daylight out. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's baffling to me. Like, nobody thought, hey, we should throw a curtain. Like, they just seem totally content to say, yep, it's 10 at night and the sun is just out.
Well, Ryan, you realize the sun never sets on
the British Empire.
Yeah, they meant that literally.
Jesus.
And since the Empire is confined to part of one island now, it's
right.
You know.
Right. So yeah, I enjoy The Crown.
I ended up watching and not regretting a single second the entirety of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
How were you so late to that?
Please see dad shit.
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen any of it.
It's very good.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I caught up with it just in time for it to get canceled and revived. That's where I was. I was actually finishing the series and I was like, man, I can't wait for the next season. Oh, happy jump, sad jump, sad jump, happy jump. Yeah, completely worth it. I think you can do an entire horoscope. Personally.
Oh, we did this yesterday.
Yeah. Holly suggested this. You can do an entire horoscope of what particular Brooklyn Nine-Nine sign you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because I was concerned that I present myself as a Rosa, but I'm really an Amy with aspirations of being a Gina. Whereas
I was going to give you Gina, but
Spencer is Terry with Jake Rising.
Yeah. I've evolved into a Terry with Jake Rising. Whereas Ryan,
this isn't going to be good. I know it's not going to be good.
Give me the bad one because I won't know what it means.
You're Scully and Hitchcock.
No. You work with a lot of those, but none of them are on this podcast.
Actually,
Jason,
like,
is probably the closest to a Rosa, right?
Jason is probably the closest we have to a Pimento.
That's a little far.
No?
Yeah, I'm gonna actually say this.
Bud is the Rosa of the college football staff.
No, Bud is our Holt.
Yeah,
Jesus.
That's fascinating. Just change the accent.
Oh, wait, Godfrey is pimento.
He's been undercover too long.
Yes. A little paranoid, a little too excited. Yeah. Yeah, at some point.
Been out in the field a little too long. I will give Jason, I think Jason is probably more as close as we get to a half Diaz, half Jake.
That's fair. Right. Oh, I'm Doug Judy. I'm the Pontiac Bandit.
You
Oh. None of us deserve that.
Hello, everybody. I'm Doug Judy. God, Craig Robinson. I don't know what he's paid to be Craig Robinson. They need to triple it, though. Quadruple it. He's magnificent. Yeah, I cannot endorse watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine more because, and I've said this before, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine really filled the void in my life that I didn't realize had been empty since they stopped making Reno 911, which is a show I can immediately step into, watch for 22 minutes. I get guaranteed well-packaged absurdity with just enough like humanity undermining it, and then I don't have to interact with it, right? There may be some overarching plot lines. Don't sweat them too much.
No.
Not that big a deal. You can pick them up fast. The writing, it's astonishingly consistent. Like, I don't know if there's an actually bad episode. Most of it's like how much of it is improvised? A lot of it. And there's a legitimately great character in it. And that would be Captain Ray Holt.
God.
Andre Brower, who somehow by not being funny is the funniest person on the entire goddamn show.
He's exquisite.
It's the best character on television right now.
It is.
The hot damn moment is a top 20 TV moment for me. Hot damn!
No, it's when he's taking a hula hoop class.
Yes.
No one will ever know.
All right, I got to throw one more TV show in before we leave. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but Killing Eve is unlike anything I've ever seen on television. And I'm a blogger, so I've watched a really stupid amount of television. Go watch it on BBC kind of immediately. And don't read anything about it before you go in. Just go.
Okay.
There. I don't have any jokes. It's incredible.
Speaking of not reading, next up, let's knock books out of the way. I don't know how this is going to go because I'm pretty sure we've never talked about this subject on here. When it comes to me, there's probably a reason. My job is reading, so I don't try to do minimal of it during not working. I did read an actual serious book this off-season, Battle Cry of Freedom, A Civil War History. It's awesome. It's fully, it's like if you were to read one book about the Civil War, they say this is the one, and that sure seems to be the case to me. It's got receipts on everything. And otherwise, there have been a lot of Amazon sales on comic books. So listen, Godfrey, I am ready for you to quiz me on hit me up with whatever you got. I think I can survive it. Two of my favorites were Old Man Logan, catching up on that whole run, and I'll just throw this name out there, Klaus, Klaus. Read that. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. You'll catch on a few pages in and think, no, this is fucking stupid. And then by the end, you'll say, that was amazing. But the main one, to go back to Spencer's point, Thor, God of Thunder, specifically the God of Thunder run,
ooh, yeah,
is the most fun I've ever had reading a comic. And like, you know, I've been reading comics since, like, you know, you scam some kid out of a Brett Favre rookie card and sell it for some X-Men comics in the 90s. Like, I know what I'm talking about. Thor, God of Thunder, it's so fucking metal. It's got the same tone as Ragnarok, where it's like Thor almost knows how ridiculous he sounds, the things he says, but he also knows he can back him up. If you like comics at all, it's a blast.
I would say, actually, if you don't like comics, I too got on the comic book because my elder son is now old enough to sort of read comics and, you know, understand most of what's going on. You know, some things you can't and don't really need to explain, right? Especially if you're reading Doctor Strange with your kid. I read the Doctor Strange Donny Cates cycle. Donny Cates, you should just read anything Donny Cates writes, right, or makes as a comic book person. But he does a Doctor Strange cycle, which, it involves a Basset Hound going to hell to rescue the ghost of a Basset Hound. I'm sorry, because Loki accidentally kills this dog because it's fat and old and tries to defend Doctor Strange and dies of a heart attack. And Doctor Strange is like, my life's ruined. He's like divorced, messed up Doctor Strange. who is pretty much lost everything. It's great. It's absolutely phenomenal. That was a damn hoot.
I think I have actual books to recommend.
I have one actual book.
Okay, go ahead.
Actual book to recommend. That would be Diane McWhirter, Carry Me Home. Because, if you don't, it's real long and it's very detailed. You might skim some of the details because, if you weren't from Birmingham and didn't live through 1963, maybe you don't need to know all 32 names of the people at, like, the Clavern meeting by the barbecue joint, which, by the way, a lot of Klan meetings at barbecue joints when the civil rights movement's going on.
Probably also a fair few now.
Yeah, but Carry Me Home, it's about 63, it's about Birmingham, it's about the most dangerous man from Birmingham ever, that would be Fred Shuttlesworth. Fred, if you don't know why the airport there is named Shuttlesworth Airfield, this is why. It's named after arguably the craziest dude to ever be born, maybe in the United States. I don't know. There's like 15 points in this book where you're like, oh, he's going to die. And this little dude who's a preacher who woke up one morning early, like 3 a.m, because God told him to end segregation, doesn't die. It's astonishing. It'll really like, and it's not just about Alabama. Like you finish it and you go, oh yeah, that's us. That's the entire thing. There's also like some light comic relief in the form of all of the federales and everybody who has to go to Birmingham and all of the like weird racist operatives who go there. Pretty much everyone agrees. They're like, yeah, this place is really fucked up, but the food's incredible. Like all of the feds, they're like, you going to Birmingham? That's terrifying. They're like, yeah, but lunch, dude, lunch. So Diane McWhirter, Carry Me Home. I really, that's a life changer. Yeah, it's amazing. Go read it.
I'll go with 3 books. None of these were released in 2018. I'm sticking on theme here. I don't think anything I'm going to recommend today is going to be something that actually was produced this year. There are 3 very different books. The first is called Idaho. It's by, I'm going to pronounce her last name wrong, Emily Ruskovich. It's a very sad, very rough book, but it's very well written. It does that thing where it hides enough for you that you're not lost and you don't, you're not totally ungrounded in what's happening with the plot, but you do feel compelled to sort of move forward so that she can reveal more of what's happening. That's the first one. Second one is Station 11, which many of you have probably read. It's done very well. And that's a little older. That's by Emily St. John Mandel. That's a really cool. It's a book about a traveling Shakespeare troupe in post-apocalyptic America. And if that sounds crazy, you should definitely read it. And then the third one is probably the most on point for our podcast. It's Jessica Luther's book, Unsportsmanlike Conduct. Hey, does that seem like a thing you should maybe read about right now? How college athletic programs have systemic issues with handling cases of sexual assault or domestic violence or, on and on and on. It's I think, a very interesting read at the history of this topic, the continued problems that have popped up. It was written, I'm fairly confident it was written before any of the Michigan State things popped up, definitely before the Ohio State issues have popped up, before the gynecologist at USC, who has, as far as I know, nothing to do with athletics. It's a hard thing to read if you like college football, but it's a good thing to read if you like college football.
Holly, you got any books?
Oh, yeah. I got a local one to throw out at you. Lisa Cross Smith is an author who lives in Louisville. I'm going to say something nice about Kentucky, which is that Lisa Cross Smith lives there. She put out her first novel in, I want to say, April of this year. It's called Whiskey and Ribbons, and it's like 3 interwoven stories surrounding the death of a police officer, and it's beautifully written, and you'll find yourself kind of, especially if you're from around here, you don't really get to read voices that sound like yours as often as you'd like, but you just settle into the voices of this book immediately. It's beautiful and she's terrific. Go buy it. It's also like $6 on Kindle right now, because I just looked it up to see when it was released. Go get it.
Great. We did. We read. We did books.
Look at that. Look at all that literature.
Oh, wait. Comic book note. Comic book note. Hotel Oblivion is coming out in October, apparently, for real this time. Umbrella Academy, mount up. That's all.
Oh, yeah. And if you got kids, go read the Squirrel Girl series. Like the New Adventures of Squirrel Girl. That's like great kid stuff. Boys, yeah, girls, my, boys,
my
girls,
daughter
whatever.
At this point would put on for the My Little Pony comics. She's aged out of the shows, but not the comics.
No, they're really. Comics are really good now. It's like I know they were always kind of good. Go back and read them; they're much better now.
And you can put the you can put them on your phone and all that.
Yeah.
Let's see. How about music? And I think here by music, you know, artist, album, song, whatever. I made a little list of I think what I would call my five favorite albums to this point. Not really in order. Pusha T and J Rock, really good focused rap albums, just modern innovative rap albums. The Carters, I think, is the funnest album of the year, which is amazing because it's made by a 67-year-old man and his wife who's been famous for 20 years. And I think with this, what I like the most is, like, yes, Beyonce, you know, biggest, greatest entertainer, you know, alive right now, genius, all that stuff. I really appreciate Jay-Z's role on this. He was already, you know, a innovator in the realm of dad rap. Here, I think he invents husband rap. Where he pulls off the trick of sharing a mic with your wife, who is vastly more talented than you. You know, you're still one of the greatest and most successful. You're the most successful rapper ever and one of the best ever, but you still can't, you know, approach your wife on that scale. So instead of trying to outshine her, you just do what you can when you're past the mic. You just move the ball down the field and then, you know, she'll go up and maul somebody, you know, like, I think it's the second to last song. It's like this pass the mic boom bap style rap song where she spends most of it either roasting him or singing about how she loves such a dirtbag piece of shit. And he, you know, at one point he just says, "All right, chill." And like, you know, for the rest of the time, like he'll drop some devastating dad puns about the Lion King. You know, he makes fun of himself for his lack of athleticism, like how silly he looked diving off the yacht in the one meme photo, you know.
This is pre-jet ski photo, right?
Right, yeah. He then topped himself with the jet ski photo. But like subtle, not exactly humble, but self-confident, old,
self-aware
Jay-Z. You know, it's cool to make fun of him, but I still love Jay-Z. And like in this one, I think he finds a really, really, really comfortable groove. You know, he's kind of like the big boy.
Comfortable.
Big
like
boy and outcast is kind of the role.
The pay your bills. Pay your bills if you're a baller. Big boy.
Right. You're right. Yeah. And he steps it back. Like his last couple albums, it's been like, you know, just get rich like me. Simply get rich. And it's like, no, that's not really an option. On this one, it is on rich people to make those around them rich. He says that at one point, you ain't rich unless your friends, family, coworkers are rich, which like that's a much more apt message, you know, for this time, this climate, this country than what you're going to get out of most, you know, rich celebrities. So progressive Jay-Z. How about that? I also like this album by Young Fathers. It's like I don't even know what genre it is. It's like some dudes out of Edinburgh, there's like rapping and singing and like what Europeans think of as rapping. And it's like this like vaguely secular spiritual kind of thing. Like if you can give me like the vibe, like I'm in church, but I don't have to worry about anyone going to hell. Like I'm in.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And number five, I'm going to blow some minds out there when I say this, one of the best rap albums of the year is by Arian Foster, the former Tennessee Volunteers and Houston Texans running back. I approached it like, all right, this
really?
Is a cool guy. Yeah.
Let me be that person. Like, really?
Like, I was like, all right, this is, you know, this is a cool athlete. You know, he's an interesting dude. I'm gonna give it a chance. And then I'm like, wait, this is really good. You know, and like, you're like, do I think this is good just because it's Arian Foster? But you go back and no, it holds up. Like, it's legit one of the best rap albums of the year, period. It's like really jazzy and chill. But yeah, Arian Foster's a really good rapper.
Damn.
I'm kind of stunned by that. But
the
you
name
know
of
what?
The project is Bobby Fino, by the way.
I have to just go with it, right? Like, sure. I guess, man, I gotta listen. I'm happy to hear that though.
Yeah, it's good. You'd like it.
I was listening to Daytona. I think I wore Daytona the hell out. Like, because holy shit, how could you not like an album that's 24 minutes long? 24 minutes long and does nothing but rap about Coke. That's it.
Tight, focused on one subject, just like this podcast.
It's everything that I really want and can never produce. So cheers to you for that. I like Why Oak. Why Oak produced a banger of an album. The Ladder I Call, The Faster It Runs. Play that. Play the shit out of that. I just listened to The Internet, Hive Mind. That album is, it's damn good. It's really, really good. And that's about it. That's, you know, because I have kids and they like to listen to stuff. So on Spotify, I think the most played thing I have right now is the Lego Batman soundtrack. The Lego Batman soundtrack's been tearing it up, I have to admit.
Does Batman sing on it?
Batman does sing on it, right? He sings. He sings about how awesome and sick his backflips are, right? The best part being, like, everybody has to chant Batman after he claims something, right? Like, who has the sickest backflips? Batman! And at one point he goes, who always pays his taxes? And they're like, not Batman! Like, I'm glad that the Lego Batman movie openly embraced that, you know, the IRS is Batman's biggest opponent joke. I'm glad they just wrote that in. That's about it. Other than that, bunch of old stuff. Because I listen to a bunch of old stuff over and over again. Y'all got anything else?
Duran Duran slaps.
Is that kid friendly? Does the child enjoy that?
It depends. Sometimes she's just not in the mood for it, but like The Reflex, Rio, Hungry Like the Wolf, Notorious, Wild Boys, View to a Kill, like they all slap. I understand that most Duran Duran songs are the same song, just like in a different key or with like something changed. They all slap. Like I am totally happy that I have listened to a lot of Duran Duran in this, the year of 2018. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Also, I had the other two albums. I've been listening to Led Zeppelin 3 a lot just because of the Immigrant Song. It just worked its way back into my life, man. But
basically,
like,
Spencer and I, our entire pop culture is now viewed through Thor.
Yeah. Ooh. And
cancel all white men except Thor.
Also, if you're into, like, if you just want the loudest album you can possibly buy, go buy the new Def Heaven album. Go buy that. Ordinary Corrupt Human Love is just. If you're one of those people who's like, I like music that sounds like it's crushing me. Yeah. Go get that. Holly, you got anything?
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of. You know, if it sounds like it plays on a driving video game when it's nighttime and raining, then I've probably been listening to it lately. A lot of Time Cop 1983, a lot of The Midnight. bear with me for one second. My favorite Swedish-Norwegian dream pop band, Postiljonen, is finally on Spotify. You used to only be able to get it on UK iTunes or bootleg. It's got this beautiful, their first album is on there, Skyre, and it's got this beautiful, like, Lethal Weapon saxophone threaded throughout the whole thing. And I just love it. I drive around and think about how I'm a disgrace to the badge and gun.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's the smooth saxophone. It's the frantic saxophone when something's about to happen, right? Like,
it's a saxophone of regret and long nights and too many coffee cups with cigarettes in them.
Yeah, man.
The cop
life we're all familiar with.
What is the, how do you spell this band?
Postiljonen, and you can find them on Spotify now, which until very recently was not the case. Go get it.
Very good. Let's see. Next on the list, we have video games. It's like, as a dad, I always sort of find myself like, like, I love the slow-paced games, and especially if, like, it's one my daughter can sort of participate in. And Cities Skylines has been our game this year. It's like a modern SimCity. Like, I know there's modern SimCities, but like they're trash. And it's like what you would expect of a modern SimCity. And it's made by Swedish people. So there's all kind of stuff where it's like Americans wouldn't think to put that in. Like, you know, bike paths, walking paths. You can have a building with like a lawn on its roof. You know,
free clinics.
Yeah. Health clinics. Police.
No, we definitely have police.
Yeah, we got police. We got fucking police. There's no, you know, military base that approaches when you have 1,000 people. Like, can we take up a fourth of your land? You know, like it's a very non-American SimCity. And we talked about it. I happened to look back through what we were doing on this podcast last year at this time. We were talking about y'all were talking about Metal Gear Phantom Pain. I have now caught up. This is the craziest fucking thing I have ever encountered. The first hour of the game is the opening scene, which already that sounds insane. The number of crazy things that happen in the first hour, as soon as I could like save this thing and stop playing it, I went and read 3 different wikis just to try to wrap my mind around what the fuck I had just endured, and still felt like this is as close to insanity as I've ever been. Like, I literally felt like I am not in grasping facts, right? Like, like there's a scene where you go through this like create a player thing and it never tells you who you actually just created. It's not you. It might be the guy next to you. I don't know. Everyone's under bandages. You all switch faces. I don't know. We're escaping a hospital. There's a guy on fire chasing us. He comes and goes. There's like these Joker ghosts and, there's a unicorn on fire. There's a fire unicorn. And then you get out of this and it just starts, plop you in like a regular army game after that. Boss, we got to go invade the base.
It's not even.
What the fuck about the horse? The fire horse.
Also, you have a piece of metal in your face.
Yeah, it's just there.
It's just sticking out of your head.
Boss, if we took the metal out of your face, you might die.
It makes it makes TSA a real pain in the ass.
And from there, you just go through like this regular army game, building this base where you have like, you know, everyone on your base is like a lobotomized psycho. Like, you literally kidnap soldiers from the enemy, which is usually Russians, and fly them back to your base. And then the guy on the other side says like, okay, boss, we'll fix his brain. And then you go to base and they just salute you. It's so fucked up. And it gets weirder and weirder and weirder as you go.
I had a job, but, you know, this was a little bit better. I think I'm going to go with it. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess your base just has awesome, you know, vacation benefits.
Yeah. Did you mention that you have companions? For instance, you have a wolf a wolf from Afghanistan who has an eye patch just like you do.
Right. And you can unlock him a little vest that has a knife. Yeah. So that when you have him go clear out a base, he won't just bite the person. He will reach over, grab the knife out of his cute little vest, and then run up and stab them in their throat.
A dog that stabs. Yeah, they have that. Also, you can basically kidnap things with a balloon, the Fulton extraction, where you attach a giant balloon, weather balloon, and then it just rockets off into like the stratosphere. You can do this with bears. And when you do it, it makes a little bear noise all the way up.
You can do this with a fucking tank, like.
Yeah. You can pretty much do.
Like, it's a really good game, but it's the dumbest game I have ever experienced.
Oh, I felt like it had a stroke, like the whole time playing it. Like, is my arm numb? Do I smell toast? Jesus Christ! What is this garbage? I can't stop playing. I never really finished it. Which I would have been concerned with, and I would have been, except there's no ending to the game. There's none. They released the game without an ending because of a contract dispute with the guy, Hideo Kojima, who made it. So yeah, don't worry about that. Did it mention that credits play before every mission?
Yeah. Yeah, the game keeps trying to convince you that you're in a movie, and it'll like tell you like who the enemy is in that mission. Like they're like, boss, you got to go here and kidnap this guy. It'll be easy. But like the thing pops up and it's like, you know, this mission also features Satan. And you're like, oh shit. or excuse me, not Satan. That would be normal. You know, right. Like giant metal robot Satan.
You can smell so bad in the game if you do not shower that your underlings will throw water on you in order to bathe you. Or you can do my favorite thing, which is... There is a way... No, better. You can hide in garbage in, like, dumpsters, right? To escape the scrutiny of guards. But what you... My favorite thing to do is to take the time-traveling cigar. Yeah, I'm not even going to explain it. You can just smoke this giant thing that looks like a huge joint, and time magically starts to pass quickly. You can do what I did, which is get in the dumpster and smoke it for 3 or 4 days straight. just keep hitting it. Like, I was like, how long is it going to let me do this? And you see, like, through the little slit, right? It's like, daytime, nighttime, camera angle switches. And it's just a dumpster with smoke coming out of it. And I was like, how long can I do this? And it's like 7 days later, you come out of there and flies are swarming around you.
It's like you're hibernating Suge Knight.
Yeah. You know what I did after, you know what I did after I was in the dumpster for 7 days and stepped out of it? I got back in. Got back in, just lit up for another 3 days.
I don't think this roast is done. Let's pop this brisket back in.
What are you doing? Just get my mind right. Just get my mind right, man. It's an amazing game. The game that I have played, and this will, I think, play into Holly's as well, because Holly moved back to Atlanta, and one of the things that Holly has done in her time back is teach my son the meaning of humility, because my wife and I have been unable to do it. However, we do have Mario Kart for the Nintendo Switch. And the lessons one can learn from Mario Kart are endless. However, I think you taught him the most important one.
Which is that the game is never cheating. You're just always going to be worse than me.
That's right.
At Mario Kart.
Because I have to take his feelings into account, right?
You don't have to take his feelings into account.
A little bit. I do. I gotta
suit yourself.
There's therapy on the end of this. Yeah. But you can waste him.
Would you like to tell the group the story of the very first race I played against your son at Mario Kart, which was also, I think, the first or the second day I had ever played Mario Kart on the Nintendo Switch?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you were just still learning the controls and you were ahead of him. I believe at the final, mm-hmm. right? Were you in second place? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was in first?
Oh, no, I was in first and I let him pass me.
Oh, you let him pass you.
On the third lap.
Mm-hmm. Third lap with about, I don't know, probably about 5 seconds of run up to that. Mm-hmm. And what did you do right before he crossed the finish line?
Put on the brakes, let him pass me, and then shelled him off the course and won.
Yeah.
He's eight, by the way.
He's eight. Yeah.
Owned.
But he's kind of an asshole. And he needs to be put down.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. I will say also, for an 8-year-old, he has an amazing grasp of games cheating philosophy.
Oh, yeah. No, instantly.
He's in, what, second grade, third grade? What grade is this child in?
He's going into second grade.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. He's in second grade. He is already controllers broken, games cheating kind of kid, which makes me wonder if there's like a genetic test for that. Like, can you, when you're testing for all the other things that might crop up in your child's life before they're born, can you test whether he's going to throw a controller?
He's actually in third grade. I'm an excellent father.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He is eight, right?
Yes.
He's yours?
Yes. Okay. But he's already going to be the football fan who goes, refs cheated us.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in a game you lose by 38 points, right?
I love him to death, but he has the heart of a snitch.